Bucks Pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Welcome to the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5. It's Monday, but it's a short week. Well, for a lot of us. 251-343-0106. If you want to be in touch with the program, all you got to do is text, and we'll do our best to respond to whatever it is that is on your mind. Coming up on the show here this morning, we had a last-minute cancellation, but we got a fill-in here. John Merrill, our former Secretary of State, is going to join us here in about 30 minutes. We get his thoughts on this whole election cycle, and not so much the results. I mean, they are what they are, but just changes in the electorate and the way we do it here in Alabama. Polling, what happened there? I was talk a little baseball. My friend John Merrill is a big Reds fan, Cincinnati Reds. Even though they're not having the greatest of seasons, they're still a fun ball team to watch. Anyway, but we'll hear from him in about 30 minutes. Dale Jackson, as we do every Monday, we'll talk to him, and then we'll wrap it up with fan favorite former state senator Dick Brubaker. So stick around for that. In the meantime, you want to get in touch with the program, 251-343-0106. You want to be in touch with the program, you text me, and I'll do my best to respond to whatever it is that is on your mind. First up here, we did this again, and I think we got to say enough is enough. The Alabama Republican Party on Sunday rejected the ballot challenge against John Wall, our lieutenant gubernatorial candidate here, the Republican nominee. And I think that is the right judgment here. I just, at this point, we've already had the election. We've already had the runoff. And it's over. Okay? It's over. And I know there's some stipulations about 7 years, but I think there's a plausible path to meeting those standards. Supreme Court just ruling post-election grace period for mail-in ballots. So, I guess it says ballots received after election day will indeed count. And one would assume this is a victory for pro-mail-in ballot practitioners. Upholds the grace periods. What's the appropriate grace period here? 2 years? I mean, can we pinpoint that? But it's a Mississippi law that has been upheld here. More on that once I get a chance to kind of read the determine some of the details here. But back to ballot challenges, and so John Wall is green lit to continue as a candidate on the ballot. Probably doesn't put it to rest, but somebody will challenge it again, I'm sure. I was watching, guys, you don't know how on Sunday nights when I'm trying to like look around for what's going on. I was watching Joyce Vance on her podcast last night, talking about the challenge to Tommy Tuberville. So they're going to have, there's a court hearing today, apparently. She had Barry Ragsdale, who's filed this lawsuit in district court about Tommy Tuberville. And we've talked about it. He acknowledges the whole legislative aspect of this. And he acknowledges the Tuberville argument that the Republican Party can put who it wants to on the ballot. The question is determined by the legislature, the eligibility, constitutional eligibility question. So what I think will happen here is it's going to go all the way to Alabama Supreme Court. You'll hear this. I would be surprised if this gets kicked out today by this Montgomery County judge. And you're going to see the AL.coms. You're going to see my friends at APR and other places. See, we told you so. We told you so. But the argument here is, obviously, Tommy Tuberville doesn't live in Alabama. He lives in Florida. They cite a bunch of evidence, a bunch of circumstantial evidence. Saying that he's not a resident. And they say that this isn't at all a legislative question, that this is an Alabama Supreme Court question. And they're optimistic about this, but they're also optimistic that Doug Jones can win the election in November. But I think you're going to get this, you're going to hear from the Alabama Supreme Court that, you know, like, this isn't really up to us to determine at this point. So my take on it, and this is the coherent take that I think makes sense about Tommy Tuberville and his residency. Anybody can run for, this is what John Gray kind of laid this out, and it makes sense. You know, anybody can run for office. Are you eligible to be in the office? This was the no-dying question. Remember, was he eligible to be mayor? Could he get a pardon and then win the election, have a pardon during the election cycle, and be mayor? And I think they determined, yeah. And this happened in some small town in Alabama where a convicted felon ran. He wasn't eligible to be mayor. He won the election. And they had to go to court, and they had to kick it out, and they had to do it all over again. So the constitutional question, would it be answered by the Alabama Supreme Court? This doesn't go to the federal courts. And there's no way this will happen because this is an elected statewide Republican Supreme Court, I believe. It's just the politics of that are not going to lend itself to their case. But I think they'll say, I guess this will clear this up once and for all. Questions about eligibility to be governor or lieutenant governor. Where is the venue of jurisdiction? Is it in the courts or is it in the legislature? Because the legislature, the governor can't, I mean, the Supreme Court can't impeach a governor. But the legislature can. They did this, it's just like our system. The Supreme Court could not remove, the U.S. Supreme Court could not remove Donald Trump. And, you know, in this state, we qualify candidates based on the party. And they have had their hearings. They have had their deliberations. Now, twice. Said both Tommy Tuberville and John Wall were indeed eligible to be governor or lieutenant governor. And then if it gets to the courts, what law, what precedent do they cite to remove somebody who was already elected or primary, won the primary elections, to strip them of that? And I, you know, we've been talking about this for a long time, but here we are. Tommy Tuberville is the presumptive Republican nominee. It's certified. He's a presumptive governor, as far as I'm concerned. Here we are. We'll I guess we'll figure this out once and for all, and maybe this kind of like, we can't win a deal. We can't win an election, so we're going to do it this way stuff. We'll end the lawfare, our local lawfare. But it's a big deal to undermine, and this is it, undermine the overwhelming will of the Republican voters about who their nominee is. And, we don't have, like, definitions of what resident citizen is. We're going to, at least to me, like, we're going to get finally something in stone in writing, a precedent here. 251-343-0106. But I was watching that. That's their argument, that they reject the claim. That this would be decided by the legislature, that they think it's the courts. Barry Ragsdale. Somebody maybe we get on the air. I don't know. I give him a fair hearing here, but I'm very curious as to what this means. Also coming from the U.S. Supreme Court here, a decision on the firing of the Fed governor. Remember, you had a lower court. Say that Lisa Cook was could be fired by Donald Trump. That is, according to MS Now, coming. And we'll let you know as soon as they give us something definitive here about what's going on. Also, what else we got here? Yesterday, Sunday shows, my big takeaway here was there was a lot of talk about Haitians and temporary protected status. So now that we know the Trump administration can end quote-unquote temporary status, What happens? And they Tom Homan and others with the Department of Homeland Security have signaled that they're going to start sending Haitians and Syrians back. The temporary means temporary. And you had some a couple of Ohio guys, I think Mike DeWine and John Kasich. No, we need to allow these Haitian migrants to stay. It's just mean. It's cold-hearted. Up, here's it. Supreme Court allows Lisa Cook to remain at Fed and loss for Trump. So Trump had a couple of victories on Friday, and it looks like he's taking a couple of L's today. That's according to CNN. So Lisa Cook remains on the Federal Reserve as a governor based on the Supreme Court. 251-343-0106. Hit us up on that text line. We'll get to those in just a moment. This is the Jeff Moore Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Cotton in the ditch. We all picked the cotton, but we never got rich. Daddy was a veteran, a Southern Democrat. They ought to get a rich man to vote like that. Singing song, song of the South. Sweet potato pie and I shut my mouth. Gone, gone with the wind. There ain't nobody looking back again.
Back to the Jeff Moore Show on FM Talk 106.5. Good Monday morning to you. Thank you for being with us. We always appreciate it. 251-343-0106. Here's the question. This is a good question. How can a sitting senator of Alabama not be a citizen of the state? You can't. You are a So the rule is that the day you take office, that you are a citizen, I mean, you have to be a resident or a citizen of the state. And for the U.S. Senate, rules for governor are a little different. Or a little, but a lot different. It goes from day off to 7-year requirement, which is, you know, but the way they did this, the Civil War was still fresh on the minds of Alabamians, or not the Civil War, but Reconstruction, and people who moved to the state, who carpet-bagged here, and ran for office and were successful. So, that being said, they put this onerous stipulation, 7-year resident citizen. But by the time he is sworn in to be governor, it will have been at least, he would have served 6 years in the United States Senate. Does he get credit for any of the time preceding that? Now, look, I don't know where he laid his head down at night or where he continues to. However, I know 7 years before what will be inauguration day here in Alabama in 2027. I know starting in 2019, he was in Alabama a lot when he was running for United States Senate. And he first announced, first time I saw him, now we had seen him at some Algop dinners. This is Tommy Tuberville in 2019, 2018 even. 2019, he announces for United States Senate. And you start seeing him everywhere. And when I was on the air in Huntsville, Alabama, he was at a lot of functions. Now, I mean, was he commuting back and forth from Huntsville to Destin? Was that what was going on here? This is very anecdotal. But it's 2026 now. That was at least 7 years ago. There's lots of stories that I've written at the time for Yellowhammer News, followed him around the campaign trail. And it comes 2020. In early 2020, the campaign really got underway, and that's when you were on your way to primary day. And, of course, he and Jeff Sessions competed for that in the runoff, and then he ultimately becomes U.S. Senator. Defeats Doug Jones, the incumbent. So I believe he's eligible. I know some listening to this show don't. I don't think the voters in this state have any issues, or they would have voted for someone else. They had other options. Kim McFeeters, maybe another candidate or two. And I also think this is something else that I think is really important, probably not talked about at all. Well, Lieutenant Governor Ainsworth was still looking at running for governor against Tommy Tuberville for a time. They looked at it too. They considered if they could challenge this and keep him off the ballot. And I think they determined no. So it's been looked at like exhaustively. But the conclusion is always the same. Like, no, you're probably not going to win there on this technicality. 251-343-0106. Stay tuned. This is the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Virginia coal miner, let me thank you for your time. You work a 40-hour week for a living, just to send it on down the line. This is for the one who drives the big rig.
thing I remember knowing was a lonesome whistle blowing and a youngin's dream of growing up to ride on a freight train leaving town.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Monday morning. Text line, you want to be in touch with the show, 251-343-0106 is how you interact with this program. It's still to come on the show. Dale Jackson, our Monday regular, that's in about an hour. We'll hear from him. And then in the 11 o'clock hour, fan favorite, former state senator Dick Brubaker will make some time for us. So please make sure you stay tuned for that. But joining us now, he's been, a reliably interesting guest over the years. Always appreciate his time. But former Secretary of State John Merrill joins us on the line. Secretary, good morning. How are you?
Hey, Jeff. Great to be with you, brother, as always.
Hey, thank you for making time for us. We do appreciate it. We'll start here before we get into the politics, but I watch your social media. You've been up at you've been up at the Great American Ballpark quite a bit this year already, haven't you?
I have, and have had great experiences every time I've been. It's been a lot of fun. Haven't seen near as many Reds victories as I had hoped to see or wanted to see, but it's still been great to just be there and to interact with some of my friends and some of the other fans. It's been a lot of fun. I actually took my mom up there last weekend, and that was her first time to Cincinnati, let alone going to Great American and seeing the Reds play there. She had seen them play in Atlanta before, but you know what the funny part, Jeff, some people would say, well, how long you been a Reds fan?
There we
she
go.
Told him straight up. She said, I'm not a Reds fan. She said, I'm a Yankees fan, and I always have been. And she has always been a Yankees fan. She went to see the Yankees play when she was a high school senior. They were able to take a trip to Washington, D.C. and to New York. And so she got to experience that firsthand. So she saw Mickey Mantle play, and she saw Roger Maris play, and she saw Bobby Richardson play, and she saw all of those people that we grew up knowing about that had been some of the legends of the New York Yankees. So that was a lot of fun, but she had a good experience anyway.
How does somebody like you from East Alabama become a Reds fan?
Well, you know, when I was a little boy and first knew anything about baseball, that's when the Big Red Machine really came into existence. And to watch those guys that were a part of that team, it really made an impression on me, and one that I hold dear, because that was something that helped kind of set my path as far as what I enjoyed watching as far as baseball was concerned, with Tony Perez and Johnny Bench and Joe Morgan and Dave Concepcion and Pete Rose, George Foster, Ken Griffey, Cesar Geronimo, and then a great bevy of pitchers that were just outstanding Major League Baseball players: Jack Billingham, Fred Norman, Don Gullett, Will McEnany, Raleigh Eastwick, Pedro Borbón. I mean, those guys were guys that helped set the standard for baseball excellence in the 60s, 70s, and the early part of the 80s. And so the Reds became my team, and I have followed them since that time, and have just thoroughly enjoyed being able to be up there. And as you know, because we talked about this too, I don't know if we talked about it on air, but being able to meet all of those guys and interact with them, become friends with some of them, especially George and Vicki Foster, Jeff Brantley, and Ashley, his wife, some of the other people that were not as well known, like Doug Flynn, who was a utility player and a rookie on the 75 team, and then in his sophomore season in 76, who was also a great Kentucky athlete at the University of Kentucky, where he actually had a chance to play basketball for Coach Rupp as well. So, you know, being able to experience all that and then develop personal relationships with these people has really meant a lot to me.
Well, it's a cool thing, and I always...
Let me say this. Yeah. I'm sure it hadn't meant anything to them, but it's meant a lot to me.
So it's a cool thing to see a guy from Alabama interact with. I mean, like, you never would have made the Cincinnati connection, right? Heflin connection there. But we'll continue to follow. Let's get back into...
Let me say this, too, before you get into the politics. But one of the things, the 50,000 watt clear channel voice of the Cincinnati Reds, WLW, is the reason I was able to personally invest so much into it, because I could listen to the games every night, and Marty Brenneman and Joe Nuxall, and that enabled me to develop more of a relationship by just being able to listen and see those things and know who they were and know about the things in Cincinnati and in the tri-state area. And so anyway, that meant a lot to me. I appreciate you letting me share that.
Yeah, because I think a lot – that's how I was. I mean, growing up in the Birmingham suburbs, but, like, they didn't have an Atlanta Braves affiliate until they got good, and you could always hear WSB at night. You can
absolutely.
Also – but you could hear the St. Louis and sometimes
– Yeah, KMOX.
Yeah.
1120 KMOX.
Sometimes you could get WGN. You could get that's Cubs. Right. But even though they were on TV, you could still listen to them on the radio. So, I mean, it was – man, that's like AM radio back in the day. You could listen to – if your team was off, you could listen to other games. Let's start here and – you know, look at this election cycle that we had a couple of weeks ago now. The polling in this state has gotten really bad. I know there's a lot of, like, you know, internal kind of campaign things being floated out there that are used as propaganda or whatever. But, like, the so-called above board polls, like, just totally missed this election.
Oh, yeah, they did. And look, it makes you wish for the days of Capital Research and Dr. Patrick Connor and Dr. Jim Stovall, who really started polling in Alabama, and they were professors at the University of Alabama. And then there were some outstanding Auburn people who had some great polling operations. And then Dr. Hubbard actually hired Auburn's number one pollster and put him to work at the Alabama Education Association. So you could always rely on the messaging that came out of the Alabama Education Association, because you knew it was going to be accurate because Dr. Hubbard paid for it to be accurate. But now you've got people that they just make things up and put it out there. And if they get somebody to run it, you know, that's all that matters, is just getting somebody to run it. So that really has been very, very interesting to watch, Jeff, and very disappointing, because people want reliable information that's accurate as they evaluate and assess what's actually going on in a particular race or a particular series of races. And you're not getting that at all now.
Well, now, I mean, you know, the connecting to likely voters has become difficult. It's become a challenge. You know, obviously people don't have landlines like they used to. There's a lot of text, a lot of online stuff, but it's all just sort of gobbledygook, and, like, it's spitting out some results that just aren't reality.
You're exactly right, and that's the most disappointing start, because people put faith and confidence in that, especially that U.S. Senate race, and they were saying how Jared Hudson had done this or that, and Jared Hudson was going to lead, and Jared Hudson was going to be the nominee now, and none of that was even close to being accurate, and yet people bought into it, and then they wondered, well, what happened? And obviously, some people were misrepresenting what happened. And yeah, well, it's a little late to acknowledge that now, but it's true.
Well, I mean, like I said, this the whole time, like, the votes are tallied, and, you know, Jared Hudson wasn't going to win that race by 7 points. So we just are having a hard conversation about these polls. And, like, I'm the editor in chief at 1819 News, and I run these polls, but, like, now, like, we have a baseline, and these same pollsters come along, we could at least point to what they did in this election cycle. But the other thing that was interesting about this election is, going into it, there was so many undecideds. Like, people would respond to these surveys, declare themselves to be a likely voter, and, you know, then they just obviously hadn't made up their mind. And I think that was taken into these surveys like it was, you know, well, we have 50% plus undecideds. You know, a good portion of those aren't going to show up to vote in the first place.
Exactly. And that's hard to do when you're trying to prepare an accurate assessment from a polling situation. But, you know, it's just it makes it more difficult, especially when you're trying to educate the electorate.
Well, the other thing is, and you know, kind of on the same note here, I think that the way these campaigns are trying to connect with voters, and this is where you get these just insane numbers of high undecideds, that there's something missing here. That the campaigns, the consultants, or what they're doing, it seems like they're using a playbook that's antiquated, that a lot of the things you do to get your candidate to raise awareness, to raise name ID, the world isn't that way anymore. The world's changed drastically. And that's why when they get these surveys, they say, oh, I've never heard of these people, even though they've been running ads or they've been sending out mailers or whatever.
You're exactly right. And I tell you, one of the things that people, and you just touched on it, Jeff, but not specifically, but one of the things that we've seen is people fail to evolve into the next generation of politics. You know, I remember back in 2000 when Bill Bradley was running for president against Albert Gore. They were both running for the Democratic nomination. And of course, Vice President Gore was successful in securing the nomination. And then he was defeated by George W. Bush. But Bill Bradley used the internet. He was the very first person to actually use the internet for messaging, for research, homework, positioning, all of those things, websites, all of that. And people kind of made fun of him. But then, just 8 years later, President Obama took it to an entirely different level, and it actually resulted in a phenomenal change in the way that people have done election work now, as far as contacting people, utilizing resources, especially electronic resources, things that had never been done before. And so that's where we are. But the people that often started are the ones that are forgotten, just like Senator Bradley from New Jersey, who was a Hall of Fame basketball player for the New York Knicks. Throw something in there for them, since it'd been 53 years since they won it, and now they have. But I think that it is something you need to give him his due, because he was always a visionary, and he saw that then well before anybody else.
Well, here's something else to think about, too. And if you're, I know we spend a lot of time on polling, but if you're trying to get, like, to the core of it, like, what's really going on in the state of Alabama heading into an election? And I think, you know, there's a lot of these kind of cookie cutter pollsters from out of state that come in and they look at, you know, the 24 cycle or the 22 cycle, or go all the way back to 2020, whatever it is. And they try to rely on this historical data. They say, well, this place showed up here, but the state is, like, so dynamic. I mean, it's a very tribal state. You know that. But you may have, like, an issue that's getting voters out. And, like, here it's been the solar farms in Baldwin County. Or if it's in Etowah County with the finishing plant, with the poultry processing plant, or whatever it may be. There may be something, just a burr under the saddle there that is, like, really jacking up a voter enthusiasm and, you know, making it where people are more likely to vote. But you've got to have that understanding about, you know, sort of the local politics to really understand what is turnout going to be, because I think these guys are just kind of mailing it in here and saying, well, you know, this is what happened here. This is what we think it's going to be. We haven't really done much analysis here, but we're just basing it on historical data. You can't do that in Alabama.
Not only can you not do it, but the ones that have figured out how to do it, no matter what level they're doing it, are the ones that benefit the most. And you know who comes to mind first and foremost about being able to take advantage of that and those kinds of issues?
Who's that?
Our friend Jim Ziegler.
Yeah, you're right. He's always been able to do that.
He's always been able to do it effectively, Jeff, and I think he's to be commended for that.
Yeah, because he'll talk about data centers and you know, all this stuff, and that works for him. And, he doesn't do it with a lot of funding.
Mm-mm. No funding.
Yeah. So I know.
It's just remarkable. But he's been very effective at doing that. And, look, he's been effective at doing that for 70-plus years.
Yeah, this is his second go-around here, or will be.
Going back to when he was running for president of the student body at the university until where he is today, and being 50 years apart from his first election to the Public Service Commission to this one. So it's pretty remarkable.
Last question we'll get you out of here on this. All these residency challenges, I mean, I can't get to where these people are. And, this lawfare, trying to, you know, overrule the will of the voters on a technicality. What do you make of it?
Well, look, the bottom line is nothing's going to change. Coach is going to be the nominee for the Republicans for governor. John Wall is going to be the nominee for the Republicans for lieutenant governor. And people just, they can't beat you at the ballot box, so they just try to find a way to beat you in the courts, and they've not been able to do that effectively, and they're not going to be able to do it effectively. It's just a poor man's strategy, because they're weak in understanding how to be an effective campaigner and how to get people to listen to and act on the message that they're providing.
Yeah, I agree with that. Secretary, we'll let you go, but thanks for hopping on this morning. Let's talk again soon.
Look forward to it, brother.
All right. That is former Secretary of State John Wall. Let's get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5.
He's pounded down, loaded up and trucking. Are we going to do what they say can't be done? We've got a long way to go.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5, 251-343-0106. Mike, the Supreme Court just ruled 5-4 against Trump, saying that mail-in ballots can be received after Election Day as long as they're postmarked by Election Day. Yeah, we talked about that already. Keith, Lady at Mobile, is driving the Tuberville Rosie issue like crazy. It's a great thing for Democrats to run with. It ain't going anywhere, and it's just a distraction. I think so. I mean, even if you're right on the merits, it's just not going anywhere. That's sort of the point, I believe. Is it realistic? No. This is not how you win. Jeff, I'm the accountant that analyzed several tax returns for lining up daily. He paid Alabama taxes since 2018. I think that covers 7 years. Doug and the Democrats can't run on their Maryland merits, so they had to divert attention and create doubt. That from James. So the accountant here, that relied on as a source, says that paying taxes since 2018, that covers 7 years. I agree. I mean, maybe he paid taxes in other states, but and it's my personal experience here. Having done a radio show in Huntsville, Alabama, then here, and then while my wife was, she was in law school, and then she was working for a law firm in Tallahassee, you'd go back and forth. I spent the bulk of my time in Alabama, but there was a lot of time I had to spend in Tallahassee just to be with my family. And so some of those earnings were accrued in Florida State, where they didn't have a income tax, but there were earnings that were earned in Alabama that did. And you had to differentiate them. But, I mean, we made it work for a couple of years. And then we had the grand unification here, finally set up shop in Fairhope. But I get it. Like you can have, you know, flags planted in different states and still have to navigate that. Toothless Bamber said there's still a 1410 signal, but the affiliate of the Braves network was WUNI, heard Ernie Johnson say. Yeah, it would come and go where I lived. If the Braves are good, you would get them on radio. If they were bad, they would do other programming, just general sports talk. 251-343-0106. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Porter Show on FM Talk 106.5.